Hi, I'm Aaron Sarofsky.
And I'm Austin Shaw.
This is Between the Keyframes.
This week, we're going to talk about work from home decorum, the do's, the don'ts, the nevers, how to have a successful remote practice.
What does that look like? What should you know that you probably don't know that nobody's told you because you just started working from home? Okay, so today we're going to talk about do's and don'ts of working from home. That's especially become relevant because of COVID, because we are all working from home. But I don't think many people know this, Austin, but you've been working from home for a very long time.
For many, many moons. I think 2006, 2007, I think.
That's like when the internet was invented.
Right, with a dial-up modem. No, but I've been working as an in-house freelancer, kind of permalancer in New York for a bunch of years at that point, and wanted to see if I could kind of do the same thing from home.
Well, now I think it's interesting because when I think about bringing in a remote freelancer, especially post-COVID, where they're actually going to be on our server and be a part of our team, it's a much different kind of vibe. It's less of a self-contained unit being sent out and more just how do we like impart company culture on them and make them...
And integrate them into
the system.
Workflow.
Yeah. So yeah. We use a lot of tools, like digital tools. Like we're not just Gmail and GChat anymore. We have integrated Slack. And that helps a lot just with communication and for banter about the job, on the job, just like up to the minute kind of stuff.
And posting work in progress.
Absolutely.
How do you
real
find
time.
Slack for that?
Also, you could do phone calls and video sharing and screen sharing on it as well. So you can like really be with the person all day if you just like
right.
call
yeah.
them up and just like listen
so
to
like,
each other breathe like you're next to each other in
right.
the studio.
I think back to like, you know, 2007, 2008, it's like, what was I using? Email, an FTP on my
FTP.
Site,
oh.
you know? So literally like having to like manually go into my website, like go into the right folder, put up a compressed
yes,
link
yeah.
and then send that to the client. And then, you know, I was able to deliver some stuff through FTP, but you know, there was really a throttle.
There was limitations,
right? And there was,
yeah.
Then I made the move down to Savannah. I started teaching. I moved to Savannah. I just kept doing remote, right? So I spent 10 years in Savannah doing remote. And then as Vimeo came out, that became a new tool where I could basically post a link, put a password on it, send
so
the link
useful.
With the password. And WeTransfer, that was mm-hmm. another like big change for delivering files.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare that I need to send a drive or have a drive sent to me. It happens if there's a really dense footage heavy, but
yeah.
mostly. But also the other side of like H.264, everyone's H.264, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. they want a ProRes for, mm-hmm. you know, archive, so then I can WeTransfer that. But, you know, sometimes I'm delivering projects via text on my phone. I'm like, how's this look? And they're like, great, we're done. And I'm like,
crazy.
Okay.
That's not how it goes at our studio.
What was it like for you all in your studio when mm-hmm. COVID hit, right? So COVID hits, mm-hmm. everything starts shutting down. Like, how did you got, like, how shocking was that reality?
It was devastating. You know, at first it was just like, it's just going to be a couple weeks. We kind of told ourselves that while it was preposterous, you know, like China was shut down for fucking months. And here we are thinking it's just going to be a couple weeks. We were, as a country, just not prepared. And honestly, just a month notice would have been amazing because we would have had time to really price things out and put plans in place and talk to our employees, tell them what it was going to look like. But it was just like, tomorrow, Chicago's not allowed to go to work and everywhere's not allowed to go to work. And it was just like, what?
Right.
Like what? Like, what just happened? We worked, of course, with our IT team closely and we had been experimenting with some Teradici stuff earlier, just in case somebody wanted to work from home or just because he's smart.
Wow, that's that, fortunate. Really. Wow, just to have done that already, R&D a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. So we at least knew where to start, but we didn't know the cost implications or anything like that. So
wow,
they were definitely not as high as they could have been, but they were definitely high. Yeah. So, and you know, everybody had different systems at home, and we had to do an inventory of what people had at home, but we knew they would be working on their in-studio computers. Like, we just didn't know what they still had to connect to the studio computer. So they needed something, whether it was just a tiny little, you know, laptop with a couple monitors attached to it, or most everybody had desktops at home, some kind of a system.
Explain like how Teradici works for those who are unfamiliar.
Oh, that's a good point. So Teradici is like a card that is attached to your computer at the studio. And so the real thing is like you need another computer to have internet connection to connect to that, but ultimately you are working on the computer in the studio. That like really helped because most studios, and I know ours for sure, everything's collaborative from development all the way through production. It's very rare that one person touches a job, like excruciatingly rare. So we had to kind of keep that collaboration going.
So even if you're working remotely, you're working on a computer that is networked locally in your studio.
Locally at the studio. Yeah. It's like they never left from a technology standpoint.
By 2 weeks to take classes that had never been taught online or remotely before and convert them to online. And then it was like, okay, I need to start making pre-recorded lectures and demos. And like, I made a welcome, my very first video, I spent 2 hours creating a 6-minute welcome video because I kept like wanting to be perfect and doing takes and editing, and I added like lower third, and then it was just like, all right, like this is not gonna work, like, and so I had to embrace like the Ed Wood style. Remember the Ed Wood, the director who was famous for like 1 and 2 takes because he had no money? So I was just like Ed Wood style, like one take, like if I mess up, just keep going.
You just got to get over that this is how you look.
Anytime I'm in my video chat, not anymore, but I would just stare at myself and be like drawn like a deer to a headlight. And I had to get over all that stuff. Like I was just not comfortable with the whole screen video interface. And I mean, I worked probably harder than any other quarter. Like I went way above and beyond, but it was... For the students who were engaged, like, I was surprised, like, we were able to create a culture, you know? It was different, but it was meaningful, and, you know, it was exhausting.
It's exhausting. At the end of the day, I'm just, like, super disoriented by the whole thing, you know? Because now I feel very engaged in what's going on, but then every once in a while, I, like, look around me, and I'm like, oh, I'm alone. It's so strange. For somebody like me that likes to be in the mix and likes to talk and have fun and about being bright and laughing. And, you know, I think like typically like with us, like if you're on the phone, it's going to be, again, all of those words, like a fun call. Like, so having my big thing has been like making sure that my personality isn't diminished by the technology. So when I still have snarky things to say, when I'm still being sassy or something, it's coming through. Yeah, I think it's interesting, like working from home, like I think for the artists, it's essential to be able to collaborate and to communicate real time. For me, it's essential to be able to still maintain personality and a presence and ability to kind of still see everything that's going on in the studio without just walking through the studio. I think what we need to do better is to do more kind of social things. And so we have people at the studio kind of figuring out ways to engage with everybody and what the best times to do that are. And I think like the hard thing is that at any given time, and I know I speak, of course, about my studio and what's going on with us, but I imagine it's the same everywhere. Like we can have 4 to 15 projects going on and in 1 week deliver 3 or 4 things. But nobody sees that. They just see the work that they're on. So for us, it's been like, how do we show the work and really express gratitude for all the people that worked on it and their contributions and kind of give them the floor to talk about it and to say specifically what did work well and did not work well in the remote construct, you know, so that it's not just a learning experience for like those 4 or 5 people on that job. It can be a learning experience for everybody.
Now that remote freelancers are becoming, everybody's using them and I can get these opportunities to work with studios in that capacity, it's a refreshing thing for me because all of a sudden right. It's like, I'm not just a solo artist working direct to client. Mm-hmm. Like I'm in the mix. I'm seeing everyone else's posting work in progress. It's inspiring. I've had that as a professor, you know, I mean, that's sort of a different, but you know, that's in an educational capacity. So to have that in the, you know, professional engaged in it is really fun. It's nice. Can you picture like having, you know, full-time people who are not even in, don't live in Chicago?
That's the new thing. Yeah. That's the thing that's kind of come up out of this that was unimaginable before. One, the idea that we could have freelancers anywhere in the world collaborating in the studio. Before that was hard because you'd have to file Jockey, Dropbox, or our FTP, or like whatever tool you're using, Google Drive.
Right.
Yeah. And then you need the producer to have to manage that and make sure they're getting files. And how do you work collaboratively with other team members? Now they're just working on the server. So it's just like, keep your Slack group going. You know, at that point, once you're in the studio, you're going to have to make sure whatever said out loud is said in Slack, right? Like, it's not just because so-and-so is in Portugal and so-and-so is in London and so-and-so is in Austria. And so, oh, shit, like, we got to make sure the whole team knows it. So it's going to be about keeping those things going and not getting lax about it. But I absolutely could see having a full-time person off-site completely, where before I did not see that as an option. I do think in that construct, it would be nice to have them come into the studio like 1 week every 2 months or something like that, just to meet everybody and like come in for the holiday party, do all that kind of stuff.
So that's something I've done for years, right? So I've been doing remote for, you know, years and I have my clients and I could do everything, phone, email, text, but I make a point, like I want to go visit. I make a point, like I go to New York, I take them to lunch, I give them that FaceTime. It might not be that regular, it could be once a year,
it doesn't matter, it means something,
but it's that I want to make sure that they're like, they remember,
yeah,
I'm a human.
I'm not a butt robot.
I have a face. Like I'm a person, you know. And I think that that's, you know, and I think this goes back to us being on that sort of cusp of the, you know, analog digital revolution, right? The hybriding, right? The blended. And I just feel, you know, I always feel really grateful that it's like, yeah, that I have really roots and foundations in both, you know, because I can see the strengths and the values of both.
Yeah. I mean, like, when I look back on this, how do I think that this is going to have affected me? One, I'm going to think back, oh shit, we are resourceful. Like, wow, we pivoted hard. We got there fast. We had like no struggles really switching. That's amazing. Like, that's amazing. And I think
adapt or die.
And I think if you look at the landscape of like even like all the studios and agencies and the production facilities, and everybody's adapting, everybody's figuring out. Some like did it like on a dime and some were like, oh wait, we don't exactly know what to do here. It's going to take us a minute, right? But everybody did it. We're all kind of figuring out our way of doing it that works for us. And I think to your point, I have some preconceived notions uprooted as a result of working from home, especially working from home with a 3-year-old in the mix. Like, the way my day flows is so different than it does at the studio. Like, at the studio, I have like uninterrupted, like 8:30 to like whenever I leave, you know. Here, like, until she's out of the house, like, I'm in the mix with her. And then She gets home at like 3:34. Now it puts me out of commission for about a half hour, 45 minutes. And then at a certain time in the evening, like at 6:30, sometimes a little earlier, she'll be like, I need your attention. And then I put her to bed, you know, and then I can go back to work. And then I put her to bed and then I can go back to work. But if she doesn't go to bed, which she doesn't sometimes, she's like a maniac, like it wrecks my schedule. But I'll just wake up early the next day or offset or figure out how to get my work done. And I think those are things that you just would have to trust your employees to be able to manage and do. And because of this, that's what we're doing. Right. That's what we're learning how to do. What before scared me, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to deal with this? It's going to be constant, nonstop. It worked out ultimately, you know?
No, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that, some pro tips that having done this remote thing for as long as I have, that I've learned and that I think I probably take for granted because I had to learn these the hard way. I think the first one is probably like just boundaries, right? And I was really bad at this for a while, right? I think I'm much better at it now, but I've had a long time to do it wrong and self-correct. But that, you know, when is work off? Like when is work over?
Right.
When do you stop? When do you start? Like how do you clearly detach in a healthy way so that you make sure you're recharging, you know, even if it's like, you know, physically having space, maybe you don't, right? Maybe you don't have, like, but how do you, like, when do you stop replying
to emails? To messages? Yeah.
Like, right. You know, and then I think the other, another one, and I guess, well, maybe before I jump to the next one, but just, yeah, just having that clear sense of like how to switch your mind and your sort of a, you know, executive function where it's just like, okay, like I'm off and now I'm in a different room in my home and, you know, and I'm recharging or I'm engaging with my family or, you know, watching Netflix or whatever that might be. Or the other thing I was going to say is just being responsive. That's something, another thing that I've learned to do is like, and this is pre-COVID, right? It's just like whenever a client sends me an email, even if it's just, you know, a quick receive, thank you.
Big thing.
Right? Just letting them know, like,
you saw
that,
it.
That confirmation of receipt is really helpful, I think.
If you're off in the ether, you still have to feel an instant away, but it doesn't mean you have to respond. Just saying received to an email is going to be received, we'll tackle first thing. Perfect.
Right. Now I can Perfect. Stop thinking about it.
Now I know. Yeah. They got it. They're going to get going in the morning, which is why I sent it now to begin with. You know what I mean? That is the best advice you could possibly give. And I think the other thing is like, if you're working remote or whether you're working in a studio or remote, like you have to get the sense of where you're working, like how they have their files, how they like to communicate, how they do their thing. Ask questions and you assimilate to them. They're not going to change to you. You have to kind of bend to the way the studio is.
That's interesting because it's the same idea. It's like that learning how to interface. And I talk a lot about this with students as far as like learning software. I'm like, if you can learn how to interface, you could more or less learn any software. And it's the same thing with a studio, right? If you learn how to interface with that studio, with how they structure their projects, then you can adapt, you know? And I think, yeah, the longer I've taught, the more I see that as a real value, that ability to learn interfaces and adjust, adapt. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, just like real life, the baby is up. She's not a baby, cool. She's three, but I hear her in the background. I'm going to hear right those footsteps on. Very soon. So I think that was a good place to end our talk about the studio life from abroad. So everybody, thank you for listening.
This was fun.
Let's do it again in 2 weeks.
Hope your day is easy ease. Eat.
Okay, bye.